There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
Live from your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
Whale of a tale.
A whale of a tale.
It's going to be a whale of a tale.
Whale of a tale.
Professor Pod. Professor Pod. I'm excited about our lessons today.
Yes.
And I hope that you're very gentle on the exam, Professor Pod.
Yes.
Because a lot of these terms get confusing.
Yes.
And there's a lot of different, there's different hooks in the different.
Well, buddy, I hope you figure out what the answers are because I'm cheating off of you.
Oh, please. Please accept me.
I
mean, we'll be
you.
Your friends together.
That's why we're friends. I cheat off of you, and then you get the answers right, and then I pass the test, and then I invite you to a party, and I let you touch my boob in the dark, pretending I'm a woman.
This should be the most grateful thing I would ever experience for.
I know.
Please let me learn about whales today.
You don't have a chance in hell, buddy.
It's going to be a whale of a tale.
No
Welcome
chance.
To Last Podcast on the Left, everyone. Ben hanging out with Henry and Marcus. Finally, we're going back to the sea.
Finally, we've been out of the sea for what, 6-8 months now? Not since Blackbeard have we returned to the sea.
And during Blackbeard, right? Again, yes. we discover things. We find out that the pirates obviously were a little bit more liberal, right? It was a fun little ship.
No,
right?
No. Just because they blow each other out of pure desperation for any kind of human contact, that doesn't mean they're liberal.
But guess what? This time. These guys are sucking dick and they mean it. All right? Because these are some smelly motherfuckers.
Very smelly.
Man, you know, you come up from the quarters, the main quarters, and be like, buddy, you got a little, got something on your beard there.
It's like, there's been sucking the pig leg. Marty over here.
Oh, the old pig leg.
But today, a whale of a tale.
A whale of a tale.
Whale of a tale. The tragedy of the Essex, part one.
So in the year 1820.
Oh, I can smell it now.
bread, shit. Yeast infection?
In the year 1820, an American whaling vessel called the Essex went down in the South Pacific Ocean after a massive sperm whale attacked and destroyed the ship, thousands of miles from even the nearest uninhabited island.
And I want to say that was one of Brendan Fraser's greatest performances. And I am here to tell you he is back.
Current.
He is cool. He is nice. And it shows you nice guys who were super attractive when they were younger and really got famous because of their beauty can also succeed when they're older and a whale.
You see, that's what you do. And what I love is the climax of the film when they cut off the top of his head and dip deep into the white, viscous cream that is the base of his skull.
Yes.
They went and spent money at the end of it. It was wild.
It was. Unexpected. Well, the 21 souls aboard the Essex sought refuge in the smaller whale boats with limited provisions and only a vague idea of how and where they could be rescued. What followed was a sort of Donner Party at sea,
mm-hmm.
a tale of bad luck, bad decisions, and bad leadership.
Fatal errors!
No!
And as a result, 2/3 of the whalers who left the island of Nantucket a year before died horrific deaths on the water.
So 14 out of 21, if my math is correct.
Something like that.
Yeah. Okay, something like that.
Well, yeah, he really did well.
Something
really
like good, that or 16? I'm not sure.
14.
14?
Yeah, 7 times 2 is 14. And then 7 times 3 is 21. 2/3 dead, 14 dead. Good job, Ben.
Thank
really
you.
Good work.
Well, famously, the destruction of the Essex inspired the climax in Herman Melville's Moby Dick, which is all the fun stuff that Melville crammed into the inn after making people read hundreds upon hundreds of pages about cetology and coins and endless fucking gams.
You love that stuff, Marcus, though. I know you love descriptions of gams,
mm-hmm.
which is, you think it means sexy legs, but it doesn't. It means a whale party.
A gam is a whaling when two whaling ships meet each other on sea.
And they all trade stories.
Oh, when's the last time you saw a whale? Oh, I saw a whale 3 weeks ago. Oh, and then I saw another one. Oh, that reminds me of another whale that I saw. Let's talk about it for 40 fucking pages.
Yeah, it was called the first ever podcast.
Let's just say that sperm whale is running a little low.
What?
Sucking dick.
Yeah,
it's a
that's
secret.
My story.
You gotta keep your special secret.
Now, I know as an English major, I know the point of Moby Dick. I know that it's supposed to mirror the pace of being on a whale ship for months, if not years. Yeah. It's supposed to mirror the long periods of extreme boredom that are punctuated by moments of pure fucking adrenaline.
See, Marcus, this is why whoever wrote Moby Dick, Moby himself, I would assume, he needed two friends like Henry and Ben to say, Herman,
wrap it up.
I'm getting a little bored here, Herman.
But isn't it one of those books? Because I don't remember, because I read Moby Dick, or I attempted to read Moby Dick, at least when I was in high school.
Yeah.
But I think that a lot of it now, it's one of those books where like some nerd is always like, but actually, it's quite funny. And you're like, I don't know. I might be wrong. I'm not certain.
No, I don't think it's actually quite funny. No.
Actually, what you don't understand is the just direct screaming parody of whaling life. And it's like, I don't know, man.
No. It is actually written purposefully to be boring, to mirror the life of a whaling vessel. That's what it's supposed to actually do, is you're supposed to go along the whaling vessel, along the whaling voyage with them, so you can learn what it's like to be a whaler. And that's why people consider it to be so brilliant.
If they can't understand me, how can they reach me?
Absolutely. Put some tits in there.
If you really want me engaged,
right.
I need a hell cube. I need some tits. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I need like five more whales.
I'm kind of with you on that, buddy. Herman Melville, who finished The End. With any luck, they'll hate it.
Yeah. And they did, actually, at the time.
He did.
Very good.
He was panned.
Yeah. Widely panned. Wasn't considered great until after he died.
Herman Melville sounds like a Henny Youngman style comedian who only does racist jokes for the king.
He might have been.
Yeah.
Well, if the description of long periods of boredom punctuated by extreme action, if that description sounds familiar, studies have suggested that the PTSD suffered by some whalers back in the 19th century is very similar to the sort that soldiers have been experiencing since time immemorial.
I don't want to be super stupid here, but what about the fucking whales?
The whales.
We're going to get into the whales.
Okay, because indecipherable. They're sad, right?
No, some people, yes. Okay, first of all, as we wade into this episode and understand there's going to be a lot of whale murder in this episode. Mm-hmm. But again, these are viewed as allegorical creatures, right? Like, at the time, now we love whales.
Yeah.
Right now, everyone's like, oh, whales, cute, fun, love it, want to ride one, want to fuck one if I could, right?
Sure.
Everyone says that. They're all want to have sex with these animals.
Everyone says that.
Well, I love SeaWorld, SeaWorld XXX.
Absolutely. But then, like, it's what they talk about in Moby Dick. The idea of the whale is the sort of like a search, an exhaustive search for something you can't quite catch, right? Mm. It's a mysterious beast of the ocean. It's way more of the wave than of the plate.
Okay.
Now, it's a truly capitalist enterprise in which you're raping the earth in order for maximum profits. I mean, that is whaling at its core.
This whole thing is about making luby for factory machines.
Great. Put your ear down to the earth really quick, and what do you hear it say?
Yes, I'm fine with it.
Whoa!
Yes.
Pocahontas was wrong!
Yes, I'm
fine
with it.
She was fucking wrong!
Yes, indeed. I'm happy you finally said it, Henry.
Well, when you bring 19th century American whaling down to its essentials, it is a fascinating yet brutal subject.
Oh, yeah.
See, just as the story of the Donner Party was wrapped up in the frontier exploration of the mid-19th century, so too were vessels like the Essex a major part of sea exploration during roughly the same time, although the sorts of voyages taken by whaling ships were far more intense.
They really were, because they all said the same. The reading I was doing talked about how if you were a whaler, you never knew if you were coming back.
No.
Like, as soon as that ship was going, which kind of, you know, it said a lot of seafaring enterprises at the time, that was common. But there was also, like, whaling's an extremely dangerous job. It's almost like we should have figured something else out.
Yeah.
But our economy was heavily dependent on whales.
Yeah.
And so we ended up going and getting further and further into this, which is an extremely horrible, horrible job.
Well, not to mention you're constantly in the shadow of Bob Marley, and you're like, you know, Bob's great.
The Wailers.
Fantastic musician.
Bob Marley, great lyrics,
but without the band, the Wailers, Bob.
Nah.
Maybe not everyone would get your Rastafarian meanings.
Yeah, everyone wonders about the functions of Kissel's jokes and his bon mots, and what they are is to drive the story forward.
Yeah.
Because that's what we do. It's all about endless forward momentum.
Oh, yes, indeed. I love that Bob Marley song, Don't Worry, Be Happy.
I feel like you can get permanently canceled just for that one.
Yeah.
Just that one statement.
Well, at its core, whaling is close-range hunting on the open sea. It's something closer to a battle. Furthermore, You're in what is basically a large rowboat, and you're going up against the largest creature to ever exist in Earth's history, an intelligent creature with a strong will to live.
Yeah.
Additionally, when hunting certain species of whale, specifically the sort that the Essex was after, whalers embarked on the longest voyages of any hunter in history, sometimes for years-long stretches. And of course, the longer you're out there, the deadlier the voyage has a chance of being.
Yeah, because you just get lost, dog.
Yeah.
And then the way they talk about how, like, it's just confidence in wind. Man, I don't have any confidence in the goddamn wind. It changes every 5 seconds.
Yeah, it's scary out there. You don't know where you're going.
They knew where they were going.
They don't know where they're going.
No, they know what direction they're heading, but do they know where they're going?
But a lot of that's spiritual. You're talking the difference between plot and story.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to the tragedy of the Essex, we actually know quite a bit about the voyage because the first mate wrote a 128-page narrative recounting the tale not too long after he and a few others were rescued amidst the bones of their shipmate.
The bones of their shipmates!
So there you go. Writing does serve a purpose.
Yeah, and this was the accepted story for almost two centuries. But in 1980, an old notebook written by the cabin boy on the Essex, Tommy Nickerson.
Yeah, I hope we added on a couple of chapters.
He was very fair about the sex, but he did not like to necessarily talk about being a cannibal because he said he didn't want to spend his old age being recognized as one. But I say it's nice because it gives you more room at the supermarket.
That's for dang sure.
Well, he was what do you mean open about the sex? He didn't talk about the sex.
I mean, you just read it off. It's bled off the page.
Yeah.
It's nothing but the pure word. Sensuality. I did look at, we'll get into the sensuality of whalers.
Sensuality, yes. Well, this notebook, it was identified by a Nantucket whaling expert named Edward Stackpole.
I know whaling books. They all smell like shit. Yeah. Slick to the touch.
Wow.
It was identified as absolutely genuine.
Okay.
And Nickerson was only 14 when he went out on the open sea, but he was 71 when he finally wrote down the story.
Yeah. Holy crap. Okay, so he lived a long life.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, the stories in Nickerson's notebook and the narrative written by first mate Owen Chase, they more or less matched up. But Nickerson's account was more warts and all, which gave the story a much more... human flavor.
devilish gallows humor.
It's not foreshadowing if you fucking laugh.
Yes. Devilish. Will they ever not be rogues?
So people are
going to podcast on the left.
People are going to eat each other in this episode.
Not this episode, next episode.
Next episode. Fantastic. Yeah, next episode. Great. A whole bunch of it. Yeah.
Great. Awesome.
But as far as our main source for this series goes, we have In the Heart of the Sea by Nathaniel Philbrick, which is an absolutely fantastic account of the Essex tragedy that also features a solid overview of the wild world of whaling.
I'll tell you what, they always have to blur out the blowholes, which I actually think is disgusting. Hey, let's think about this. Free the blowhole.
I completely agree. Is anyone named like someone without ED? Is there any masculine names in this?
Yeah, what do you mean?
Oh.
Yeah, there's Robert Pollard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's Wilmington Climax.
No.
There's Johnny Sucks-a-Lot.
Oh, there you go.
That was his nickname.
Yeah.
Now, when whaling was at its height, it was the fifth largest industry in America and extremely profitable.
As one expert said, you would be surprised at the profitability of these whales. He's like, I'm dying here, sir.
Well, before the discovery of petroleum, whale oil was the highest quality lubricant that humans could produce. And it made the best candles, which was no small thing in an increasingly industrializing world decades away from electricity.
Okay. The smell of this. Talk about this idea of these whale fat candles just burning and like just leaving residue, everything.
But that's why they were actually so expensive, because they didn't leave the residue. That's what they didn't burn as much soot. They were said to be the favorite candle of Benjamin Franklin.
Oh, yeah, wow. You can just see him in the shadows as he turns into the Dracul as he's banging a random gal with his big old belly.
He's looking into a mental mirror?
He was a cool guy.
But in your mind, Benjamin Franklin was a vampire?
Weird. It's a whole other all history. I've been trying to get him off this Benjamin Franklin is a vampire thing for a long time. It's been close to 12 years.
No, Gary Oldman, when he was the vampire, was Shadow. So I'm saying Ben Franklin's Shadow.
You're just mashing up a bunch of stuff. Again, hurtling forward.
Well, Well, somewhat sneakily, whaling was the industry that made America powerful enough and economically independent enough to separate from England, even if the number one customer for whale oil was the English.
It's kind of like massively psychologically and kind of symbolically appropriate that the thing that allowed America to become what it was at the time period was just the absolute devastation of every whale within hundreds of hundreds and hundreds of miles, but then selling that same whale blood to the very people that were in charge of us in the first place, but somehow that kept us separate because it seems like money was the only thing that anybody cared about.
Yeah. It seems like it's a country founded by blubber.
Yes, it's kind of like the wreck of the Exodus. It's like the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Oh, I love
but if
that
Edmund
song.
Ate Fitzgerald.
But when it came to the whaling industry in America, it had always been centered around the weird little island of Nantucket just off of Cape Cod in Massachusetts, which by the 19th century had come to define itself in every aspect as a whaling community. In fact, one prevailing Nantucket myth said that one of the founders, a man named Ichabod Paddock, had been, quote,
swallowed by a whale, in whose belly he found the devil and a mermaid playing God's for soul.
I think you stole that from Jonah in the Bible.
But again, allegorical.
No, Jonah didn't. He didn't find the devil and a mermaid playing cards for a soul. That's a fantastic image.
It's cool. It's a good Scrimshaw art piece you'd buy at a farmer's market.
It sounds like you went to a casino called The Whale.
But when it came to the types of whales that originally brought the English to Nantucket, they started with what they called right whales. Ben, do you know why they were called right whales?
Pop quiz, hotshot. See what how he fucks this up.
Because
he thinks Benjamin Franklin's Dracula.
Because whenever you were thinking about a candle and you were getting in the mood with your girl, the whale was right there.
You're saying the whale is cucking you. They're watching you from the side like a man in a hotel room.
So whales from the sea just,
I'll be your candle.
Okay.
I'll be your candle.
It's incorrect.
I would assume that because they go to the right.
No. It was because it was the right whale to kill.
That's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever heard.
No.
My answer was better.
It is just more obvious than you'd think.
Yeah.
That's how they get you on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Yeah. It's the...
That's how they get you.
The final question isn't always that difficult.
No, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Play in the mind.
It's
and you're just looking
journey.
At Regis Philbin, sweating there, sweating, looking at him, and he's just there going, it's unbelievable.
He's been dead for a long time.
Yeah, I don't know who runs that show anymore.
No idea.
Well, right whales were actually baleen whales, and their beached bodies had been harvested by the Wampanoag people of Massachusetts for centuries.
You know, I once knew a man from Nantucket.
Who
did
what? What did he do? What was his thing? What was his fucking deal, Henry?
Genocided a whole group of Native Americans that were there originally.
Yeah, you knew him. That's great.
Yeah. But in 1712, a man named Captain Hussey spotted a new whale off the coast of Nantucket.
New whale on the block.
Wow.
Its blubber was superior to that of a right whale, providing a brighter and cleaner burning light. But what truly made this new whale special was what they found when they cracked open its skull.
These guys are so fucked up. That's the first thing they thought of.
What
like,
was
crack
there?
Open its fucking head. Let's see what its fucking brains are like.
What else, what else are you going to do?
I don't know. You're right. I don't know.
You'd be the only one that shows up with a spoon.
Now, upon first exposing the fluid contained in the creature's head to oxygen, it looked sort of like vodka. But as the fluid oxidized, it came to look a lot more like cum. So they named the substance spermaceti. And they called the creature the sperm whale.
That's how it's got its stupid name.
100% true, my friend.
And the watching
oh,
these
wait,
documentaries,
hold on a second. So they
seriously.
This is the most dude way ever to name something.
Cut open the top of a fucking animal you don't know's head.
Yo, bro,
you
it looks
just
like...
saw this animal for the first time.
Yo, fucking Henry, man, you think that looks like cum, dude?
Fucking holy fucking shit.
What did
my older brother here earlier?
Call it the cum whale, dude?
Holy fucking
but
shit,
like,
dude.
Medical. Sperm whale.
Whoa, looks like a whole bunch of guys from my gym were in there recently. No, it is the pleasure I had of watching so many of these historians trying to, we, because again, we are, I'm children here, yeah, right? We're children, we're highly mature.
They're the children. They fucking are like, looks like cum to me.
But it's these watching academians just being like, and named after the male ejaculate. Like, trying to say the terms ejaculate or spermaceti, and they can't figure out how to say it. And they're, but they can't smile. No one's allowed to laugh. No one's allowed to do anything.
Their favorite euphemism is seminal fluid.
Seminal fluid. Yeah, which is so much dirtier than cum.
Shut up.
Because seminal fluid is what you scrape off a corpse.
Oh,
cum,
gosh.
At least everyone's alive in the room.
Right, yeah.
No one could certainly say that they named this thing the sperm whale simply because the stuff looks like cum. Doesn't have to be sexual.
Doesn't
just looks like cum, and that's that.
That's just right there. It's
just like, sure. Looks like cum. Great.
Because
right.
They didn't have as much icing then.
Right. So you use that, kind of scoop that up there.
But there seemed to be something about spermaceti that made writers weirdly sexual, but not necessarily horny, if you get my meaning.
Yes.
I do not. So that means that they're writing half hard.
You'll see.
Yeah, half hard. So in Moby Dick, the protagonist and narrator, Ishmael, call me Ishmael.
Right.
He experienced a sort of ecstasy as he squeezed the lumps of fresh spermaceti out of the head of the recently murdered sperm whale. This is what Ishmael said, and this is written by Herman Melville, who worked on a whaling vessel himself.
I found myself unwittingly squeezing my co-laborer's hands in it, mistaking their hands for the gentle globules.
Was because it's like when people say about paper factories, they when it smells like farts, they're like, smells like money.
Yeah.
Is that these guys are like that. If you, as you read about whalers, because we'll get into how they render the oil and blah, blah, blah. But they said these disgusting things. It was worth so much money.
No, I get it. It doesn't mean that they have to like take great joy in popping the, like Dr. Pimple Popper.
Here's another example. An 1874 memoir from a whaler named William M. Davis told of how luxurious it was to wade into pots of spermaceti to squeeze and strain out the fibers, where he, quote, almost fell in love with the touch of my own poor legs.
This is the brain of a fucking whale they're talking about, right?
They used to be, because it was so worth it. The money, it was the
Wait, okay, can I just add? So what are they getting out of the sperm?
Like spermaceti.
That
and that's
shit.
The candle.
That's the candle, yeah.
That's what they're making the candle.
The goop in the center of a sperm whale's head was worth more money than any other substance on Earth
so
at the time.
So they didn't use any, what did they use the blubber from the body as well?
We'll get into all of the blubber. Okay. We'll get into the whole thing. No, they didn't just like, it wasn't like they used to do with the buffalo in the Wild West where they kill it, cut off the fur, and then just fucking leave the corpse there. No, they used every part of the whale.
Actually, that's not true. I learned about it because there was notice to how that's how they would find whaling expeditions later on. Where they went was because they'd find the piles of dead, because they would use chunks of much as they could.
Yeah.
But the rest of it, they'd leave.
Well, no, not every part of the whale, but they'd use the blubber. They weren't just remnants. Using the heads.
You
they
just
were
find
doing the whole thing.
Floating, like, islands of rotting whale meat out in the ocean.
Of course. No, because the sailors didn't like whale meat. They say it was too tough. Too gamey.
I believe it.
So they'd rather eat Jeff.
Yeah, we'll get to that. So it's like, so they got this candle that comes from the cum of the brain of the whale, then they package it, and then they put a little spruce in it, and they call it Christmas tree, and they sell it to your grandmother?
Oh, no. Well, let's think of it this way. Like, this is before electricity, so this is the only way you're seeing at night. How is Ben Franklin going to write at night if he doesn't have his candles?
Yeah, this
And
fluid.
Think about where America would be then, my friend.
Think about there. Think about how Jonathan Harker would not have possibly gone through what he went through visiting Benjamin Franklin in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Which the whole book, Dracula's all about a real estate deal.
It really is. It very much is.
All right. Yeah.
Well, the thing about sperm whales is that the spermaceti came with a greater risk.
Mm.
Sperm whales were far more aggressive than baleen whales, and they were found further away from shore. But the quality of their oil was far higher than that of a baleen whale, so for many, the reward outweighed the risk. Now, of course, whalers immediately slaughtered every sperm whale they could find within the immediate vicinity of New England. So they had to range further and further out to kill and find them.
Real smart there.
Problem was, it wasn't profitable to sail for 3 months, kill a whale, and sail another 3 months back with this whole whale carcass. So whale ships were turned into ghoulish floating factories where whalers could kill, butcher, and process carcass after carcass until the hold was filled to the brim with whale oil.
Just fucking jiggling, gelatinous, stank, because it smell is supposed to be just absolutely fucking putrid.
Oh, I'm sure.
It's supposed to be the worst smell on earth.
I can see the Amazon Smile logo that also looks like a penis. Now that you think about it, you won't not see it.
Sure, sure, sure. Yeah, mine has that big golf club like swing at the very end of it. My penis goes is a full L.
It's actually not a bad design if that's where the G-spot is of the gal. That's your partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, but it depends on how far. Mine is like, it's pointing back at me.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
It's unfortunate anatomy.
Very weird. Yeah, okay.
Well, then and only then could a whale ship return to Nantucket after the entire hold was full of whale oil.
Oh, God, they must have really, you must have known that they were coming.
They said that they did.
A mile away.
They did. And as a result, whaling voyages turned from seasonal affairs that may have lasted like 9 months at most to years-long voyages. And likewise, the distance traveled became almost unfathomable.
Unfathomable.
By the late 1700s, Nantucket whale ships could be found in the Arctic Circle, the west coast of Africa, and the east coast of South America. In fact, the British Navy used to complain that everywhere they went, expecting to find nothing and nobody, they'd find Nantucket whalers, having whaled the fuck out of the area long before anyone else even thought of going there.
I just see a lot of robust women with their underwear sticking out of the top of their pants when we talk about this. But I also know that this is because these were the factories that this whale oil allowed us to have the entire industrial revolution inside of America. Like, it's the stuff that went into all of the machines. So they were desperate. And the people that were paying for these whale boats were people like the Macy family, the Folgers family. We're all like, these are people that, like, huge American quote-unquote dynasties were like also needing this blubber.
Yeah, whaling is like the secret history of America.
Okay.
As far as who those Nantucket whalers were, they were mostly Quakers. Pacifists when it came to humans, but fucking demons when it came to whales. See, the Nantucket Quakers were extreme weirdos, because as we all know, the smaller the island, the stranger the folk.
Absolutely.
Live from your grave.
Stamps.com has postage rates you literally can't find anywhere else, like up to 84% off USPS and UPS. It used to cost 5 barrels of wine to send one single mayor from one county to another. Can you even believe this? For 25 years, Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses. And if you sell products online, I know I do, because my words are products. Stamps.com seamlessly connects with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Use Stamps.com to print postage wherever you do business. All you need is a computer and a printer, and they even send you a free scale. But they don't send you a mailman, because now you're the mailman. And guess what? I can be as drunk as I want when I deliver the mail. Set your business up for success when you started with Stamps.com today. Sign up with promo code LEFT for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. Just go to Stamps.com, click the microphone at the top of the page, and enter code LEFT.
Now, whaling was such a part of Nantucket life that children were taught whaling terms from birth, and bedtime stories usually involved killing whales or eluding cannibals, as one might imagine doing when you regularly deal with isolated South Pacific islands.
I can't sleep, Daddy. Why don't you tell me another whale story?
Okay, let me tell you a story. So it was me and my buddy Paul, and we were on top of this whale. It was beached on a beach, right? We got up on there, and I said, "Oh, Paul, you can take the hole. You did such a good haul yesterday. I'm climbing up in the mouth. I'm going to come in his ass backwards." Hey, you know, listen, get it, sit down, lay down, lay down. This is a story. This is how I afforded your private school.
This is great, Daddy.
Well, speaking of which, there were whaling groupies. There were secret societies of young women who swore to only marry a man who had killed a whale.
See? I don't know what I'm trying to say, but see, there used to be a time where a man was respected for his job.
Well, these men could be identified by the pins they wore on their lapel to show that they'd indeed been blooded by blubber.
It's always clout.
Yeah, always. Nantucketeers even had their own toasts, not to life itself, but to good whaling.
Oh.
They would raise their glasses and say, quote,
Death to the living, long life to the killers, success to sailors' wives, and greasy luck to the whalers.
Oh. Yeah. 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 I'm actually going to be doing Dry January. I won't be able to.
No, I
can
tell when you're
one.
Doing it because I could just, I could smell the monster.
Yes.
And indeed, greasy luck was needed.
Oh.
Because whaling was a deadly business. In 1810, a quarter of the women in Nantucket over the age of 23 had been widowed by the sea in one way or another. And four of the youngest crew members on the ill-fated Essex had either lost fathers or were total orphans.
I mean, widowed by the sea is one thing. Have you ever been DP'd by the moon?
Oh, it's brutal. Brutal. Absolutely horrific what that moon can do. So if you're the lady, they didn't love the guys. They just knew they were going to die young. And they get a pension.
Well, actually, let's get right into that. You're not
Please,
too far off.
God.
But perhaps out of emotional necessity or complete honesty, the Quaker women of Nantucket seemed to revel in the fact that their husbands were constantly gone or, in some cases, dead.
Oh, is this why Natalie keeps asking me when we're going back on tour?
This is unbelievable.
See, in Quakerism, the sexes were considered intellectually equal, and the women of Nantucket maintained a complex web of personal and commercial relationships that kept Nantucket going while the men were away. Typically, a woman could expect to see her husband for 3 to 4 months every 2 to 3 years.
Whoa. Oh, they didn't love these men.
They like the blubber. Yeah.
Yes, they did. She's making blubber money.
No, they're doing their own. They're pulling their own weight. They're building the youth in Nantucket.
Well, so comfortable were these women with this arrangement that they even had a song celebrating how great it was to be married to someone they saw only briefly once every few years. Here are but a few lines.
With his brow so nobly open and his dark and kindly eye, oh, my heart beats fondly towards him whenever he is nigh. But when he says goodbye, my love, I'm off across the sea. First I cry for his departure, then laugh because I'm free.
Well, it sounds horrible. Horrible.
Yeah, I'm one of the rougher wives.
Yeah.
And you wonder why he volunteers for all these trips when it comes down to it. I suck a mean dick and I make a great shouter.
You do. Yes, indeed. So everyone's happy.
No, it's a fun like role reversal. It's the whole thing. It's like, yeah, the wife's away for the weekend, but it's the same thing. Like, oh, thank God my husband's gone. I can't stand that motherfucker.
I don't think that's a role reversal. That's the roles.
Actually, I do kind of feel like maybe it comes down to your husband might be riddled with PTSD from wrestling with one of the most violent animals that ever existed in the way in which he has to do it, and he's just a fucking gear in the cog in this whole fucking endless wheel of whale industry that he's stuck on.
PTSD, STDs, you start seeing your wife as a whale.
You ever seen you ever had a sea transmitted disease?
No. I was stung by a jellyfish once. They can sting you even when they're dead. Kind of cool.
That you remember that about me.
Yeah, you can sting even when you're dead.
Wink.
The jellyfish.
Oh. No, I mean, you might have a bit of a point there. An earlier verse of that song did talk about how much I love to spend whaling money when my husband is gone.
Yeah, I mean, again, you're in it for the blubber.
Yeah, you're in it for the blubber.
I know what's going on.
And when it came to being truly independent, Nantucket women were quite forward-thinking for the 19th century. Reportedly, a common item found in the bedside drawer of a Nantucket home was a 6-inch plaster dildo, euphemistically called a he's at home.
It's a he's at home.
I'm just so happy that they didn't go, they didn't like, oh, I don't know, exaggerate too much. Like a 6-inch dildo is just fine.
It's
That's
just
all
fine.
We need.
It's all
a
good.
Humble dildo.
It is, because again, it's not, because wait, hey, you don't want to replace him. You want to miss him. That's what the idea is, that you give him, I'd say 4 inches. Well, just so that you get a little bit.
That's a normal one. 4 inches.
But also remember, it's made of plaster, and it's going to be very rigid. So if you get a plaster 8-incher in there, that's going to be too much, because the good thing about the 8-inchers, when you get the rubber ones, you know, they're flexible. But plaster,
have you ever seen one?
A he's at home?
Look at that. Look at this big old fucking crazy head on it.
Wow.
She was expecting a lot.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow, holy shit. Apparently, according to this one woman, she says that she felt that it was mostly myth about the he's at home. But I think that's just because she already got one locked up and she doesn't understand why anybody needs
it. Yeah, why would it be myth? I mean, people masturbate all the time.
Yeah. But when it came to the whalers, they lived, as is tradition for romanticized American professions of yore, absolutely fucking awful lives of hardship, exploitation, injury, and frequent death, all while being expected to fulfill half a dozen areas of expertise. Whalers in the 1800s were sailors, hunters, butchers, explorers, factory workers, and merchants all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And yet whaling was one of the lowest paying jobs in America.
Why?
Because
literally put the Amazon logo on it.
All of the money went up to the top. The money went up to the top, and every one of these ships were bought into. They were all like time-shared buildings. They were all owned by families that then would hire out the crews. So it's like all of the money is getting more and more diluted.
It's basically the way American corporations are run today.
Right.
Whaling ships were the blueprint. It all began with whaling ships. During the industry's peak in the mid-19th century, ordinary seamen on a whale ship earned just about the same as women working in textile factories in Massachusetts. Two-thirds of what they would have made if they just moved to Boston as unskilled laborers.
But then you don't get the stories.
Yeah.
I guess not.
Put into perspective, the cabin boy who wrote the memoir of the sinking of the Essex was paid the modern equivalent of $3,500 for 2 years of labor.
That's it?
For 2 years of labor. Although room and board was technically included in the deal.
Room and the board is a goddamn ship that smells like scum from
and you should be thankful for it.
Now, concerning the Essex, it was a relatively old ship when it set off for its last voyage in 1819. It had been in service for 20 years and had gone through numerous repairs, but the ship owners, who should have long since retired it, they sent it out again and again while also refusing to do any repairs until they were absolutely necessary.
They didn't care.
Wouldn't you love to find out that this boat that you're going to go spend 3 years on to go hunt one of the dangerous, most dangerous animals in the water? For everybody else's money, not yours.
Yeah.
What if you found out that the guys that owned it, because this was the attitude of the Essex, were just being like, we think we can squeeze one more trip out of it.
Yeah,
it and like that's like, it. Can you imagine being on a plane and hearing them being like, we think we can get one more.
I mean, that's literally the story of Skeenard, yeah. Where they're like, we're going to have to repair this when we land. We'll think up and we'll fix it up after takeoff. It's like, God dang, setting themselves up to eat each other, apparently.
Yeah. Well, as we said, you know, a vessel like the Essex was sort of like a modern corporation in which people could own shares of the ship. And most men who bought whale ship shares owned shares in multiple ships. So if one ship went down, no big whoop.
I mean, but 20 people are dead, but that's not you.
Yeah, that's not
you. That's a no big whoop.
That's a no big whoop because it's not you.
It's not you.
But what that meant was that also like modern corporations, the shareholder was king. Corners were cut and costs were kept to a minimum. And besides its old age, the Essex was severely under-provisioned when it set out because it was accepted practice to nearly starve sailors for years at a time to maximize shareholder profits.
Great. Good for them. They're just like ExxonMobil today.
They're just like, and oil.
Yeah.
Oil business.
But since shit always flows downhill, the whalers of Nantucket also took every opportunity to fuck over anyone who came in from the outside to join the whaling life.
I get it, man. You want to be a part of this? It's kind of like almost like a cult like mentality. You want to do this thing that sucks? Well, I'm going to show you how much it sucks because it sucks.
Yeah,
because
it sucked for me, so now it's got to suck double for you.
Right. It doesn't. Why? Why are you volunteering to do it?
Are you on
the lam? Are you running away from the law? What's going on?
Also, the love of the sea.
Yeah, we'll get to it here in a second. I mean, inexperienced sailors were called green hands, and Nantucket children would actually wait on the docks for green hands to arrive so they could make fun of them for their poor life choices when they showed up.
Oh, you like going out on that stupid boat there? Oh, you like to, hey, well, fuck you. You're going to be dead. You're going to die out there.
Why are they doing it? Why are they yelling at them?
Because it's, you know, it's fun.
And furthermore, once the green hand arrived on the island, everyone around him's talking in nautical terms all the time in a bizarre accent that says aisle instead of oil and chirp instead of sharp, all while they're still using thee and thou because they're a bunch of Quakers.
Yeah. Yes, they were idiosyncratic.
Yes.
Are they warder people?
Warder. Yeah, they're definitely warder. Yeah.
No, I thought warder was the Baltimore area.
Warder is also Boston.
Warder.
Or is that Philly?
No, Wada. No, the Boston's Wada.
Warder, I think, is also, isn't that Philly as well?
I don't know.
Warder.
We're going to get into it.
Warder.
We just don't know.
Every one of these counties, we're going to get fucking, and all of, every one of these counties, yeah, we're going to hear
from Grumbip County is going to fucking get so mad.
Mm-hmm. When I worked at Burger King, the general manager, big old gal, looked like a whale herself. She said, warder.
That's great.
Always moving forward.
Burger King.
Always moving forward. Always moving back to fast food employment, then moving forward again.
Yeah. Also, the 1980s logo of Burger King and the 1990s logo, extremely similar.
It's true. Again,
extremely similar.
Looking forward.
Well, once a green hand went to sign up for a voyage, no one told him about any of the pitfalls. And they did this as a rule. For example, a longer voyage did not mean more wages, and all experienced sailors knew that.
Oh, yeah.
Sailors signed up for a fraction of the voyage's net profit. It was called a lay, but they never told the green hands because the green hands wouldn't sign up if they knew that.
Yeah, no one would, because it's all about what you catch, right? So there's no guaranteed pay. So you have to go. So you could go out there, have your hands torn from your body by ropes, come back with nothing and pay and be paid nothing.
Actually, you could come back in debt.
Yeah.
A lot of guys went out on their first voyage. A lot of them came back and found that they had been paid either the equivalent of pennies a day, or they would be hundreds of dollars in debt to the whaling company.
Always read your contracts. And if you can't read, you better learn real fast. Learn within 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like they did it for the experience anyway.
Yeah. Some of them did. I mean, Herman Melville did.
Did he actually whale?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was he was obsessed with it.
Yeah. Yeah. He actually went out on a whale. Yeah. He wrote Moby Dick from 100% experience.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh.
But the thing is that, you know, they had to keep the green hands in the dark because everybody except the man at the bottom needed to be in on the system. They needed to exploit somebody for the whole thing to work.
Absolutely.
Now, when it came to the Essex, it was actually considered a lucky ship because it had lasted through so many voyages.
And as we will, as you may or may not know, we talked a little bit in the Pirates episode and other episodes, sailors are extremely superstitious.
Extremely, yes. It was a large ship at 87 feet, and the last several voyages had been captained by a man named Daniel Russell, who'd since been promoted to captain of a new and larger ship called the Aurora. That meant that Russell's first mate, George Pollard. I said Robert Pollard earlier. I think that's the guy who's in Guided by Voices.
I might be.
Oh, I didn't know.
Well, George Pollard had earned a command, so he was promoted to captain of the Essex, and his harpooner, Owen Chase, was moved up to first mate for what was, unbeknownst to them, the ship's last voyage.
Yeah, man, Owen Chase, the ultimate fucking doom-filled zoomer.
Yeah.
He was this is the equivalent, we'll talk about it, but Owen Chase is... you can only listen to your intern so much.
I guess so. All right. So they got a promotion.
Mm-hmm, they did.
To hell.
Well, as far as the other men on the voyage went, you had your normal crew of youngsters aged 15 to 18. Four kids named Thomas Nickerson, Barzilay Ray.
That's a great name.
It's Barzilay Ray is a wonderful name. Or yeah. It's either Barzilay or Barzilaya.
Barzilaya.
Yeah.
Oh, Barzilay. I like Barzilay.
Yeah. You also had Charles Ramsdell and Owen Coffin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the goth one.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, he was of the Nantucket Coffins.
Oh, yeah. That was their ladies' softball team.
The Coffins were actually a well-respected family on the island. Oh, there were the Coffins, there were the Starbucks. The Starbucks were a huge family.
Oh, man.
But they are not of the Starbucks, family. They were inspired by the Moby Dick book. I looked that up.
Yeah.
Starbucks is not the last name. It's Howard Schultz that created Starbucks.
Yeah, that guy did it.
Yeah, Starbucks is a character.
My president. He'll always be my president.
Yeah, that's pretty great. Yeah, so it's the Coffin family. And I'll tell you one thing, Jerry Sneezer. They started
Stupid.
Little Caesars.
No, I won't.
And then, oh my God, Amy Queefs.
Worse. It's even worse.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's nothing like Barry Shart, or you can imagine anything.
This is funny. Well, a first name with a funny last name.
Anything can be funny.
Anything.
If the words are
Absolutely,
funny,
yeah.
You too can podcast.
Well, also, I did want one of the researchers I was looking at, because the 200-year anniversary of this sinking of the Essex was in November of 2020. And so I was watching these poor Nantucket historians, very frail, both in masks, very masked, 20 feet away from each other, trying to be interesting. It was very, very difficult.
Oh, difficult,
But one of them kept saying, like, he did some research into the family connections on Nantucket. And he's like, you know what's interesting is that everyone was cousins.
Isn't it interesting? Yes. In an island of 7,000 people, everyone was cousins.
They were all fucking each other.
All right.
Well, also, Owen Coffin was the cousin of Captain George Pollard.
Exactly.
Okay.
And that's the thing. For Nantucketers, a whaling voyage was the first step towards a long and profitable career, so long as you made your way to a mate's position, or if you were lucky, a captain. Yeah, I mean, it was somewhat interns, you know, at least the Nantucketers. There was a path forward. But for everyone else on the ship, a whaling voyage was a desperate last resort.
Oh.
You did not want to end up on a whaling ship.
No.
But in many ways that the rest of America was not, whaling ships were just the tiniest bit more egalitarian. Just a bit. and it was one of the few places where a black man could be paid the same as a white man, although he
very little.
Yeah, he still couldn't expect to be treated, housed, or fed the same, but he could at the very least be paid the same.
And that's also because of the Quakers' view, because they were anti-slavery.
Yeah, very much so. But that is to say, 7 black sailors signed up for the last voyage of the Essex, the last crew members to do so. And with the standard number of 21 men aboard, the Essex set sail for what was supposed to be a fairly routine 2-year-long whaling voyage in August of 1819. Now, George Pollard was already well acquainted with the Essex, having spent 4 years aboard as second and first mate. But this was his first voyage as captain. Likewise, it was Owen Chase's first voyage as first mate. And if all went well, Pollard could be promoted to captain of a new ship following this voyage, and Chase could be put in command of the Essex.
We got to be careful. This is why you can't train. I'm sorry, Fernando. We can't train the producers too well because all they're looking at the back of your head, right? Yeah. They're looking at your back of your head wondering, when do I get to have the headphones on?
Yeah.
When do I get to get over there, right?
Well, Fernando does a great job as one of the co-hosts.
He's crushing it. He's already doing it. He's already doing it.
He's done it. It's over.
Wow.
He's right there.
It's happened.
You can hear everything you're saying.
He's staring at you. He's staring at the back of my head.
That's where we're all going. Fatal error.
And so after the captain gave his speech on the first day of the voyage, as was tradition.
Okay, guys, just so you know.
Yeah.
Looking for whales, number one.
Yeah.
Biggest fish you're going to see today.
The whale?
So if you're curious, is that a fish or a whale? Is it bigger than you?
Yeah.
It's a whale. Okay, number two, let's keep the farts to the top of the boat, okay?
Okay.
I don't need everybody farting in the bottom of the boat because it's already getting me smelly enough, okay? Good team. All right, every break.
Good team. Can I kill a dolphin?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. And just show it to me so we can all have fun watching it scream. Okay?
All right.
We love screams here.
Great.
Dolphins, speaking of which, they actually liked dolphin meat a little bit more than whale meat, but they didn't really like eating dolphins that much. And it was actually very hard to kill a dolphin because they had only the harpoon to use, and a dolphin's hide is very thick.
Yeah. That's why you had to use dynamite.
Yeah, I've seen the very sad documentary.
Very sad.
Yeah. Well, the Essex pushed off with high hopes and big expectations from the people in charge. High stakes.
Why the hope?
Because Pollard it's a very old ship.
Okay.
So he's been promoted to captain, but he knows there's no future on the Essex. So I got to do a great job on this so I can get promoted to a bigger ship. And Chase is thinking like, okay, this ship maybe has 2 voyages left in it. If I get promoted this next time, that I can also get promoted. So it's is a corporate ladder that all of these guys are desperately trying to climb.
Let me teach you one thing about being a CEO. You see that carrot? You see it's in front of that person's nose? You pull it back.
You pull it back.
Pull
make
it
them
back.
Jump.
And
make
then
them jump.
Make them jump.
But it's also, you cannot overestimate oversay how valuable whale oil was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so every single time they were trying to get this shit, it was always a high priority for them, for the people up top.
But for the people on the bottom, the green hands, the voyage was immediately a nightmare. Most found themselves so seasick they were ready to die. Have you ever been seasick?
Yeah, dude.
It's fucking...
Remember my face blew up?
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yes.
Half of my face got swollen because we went on a little expedition to go fishing. Oh, it was horrible.
Well, but that was right up until they got what was called the Nantucket Cure. To cure seasickness.
Tell me this is not going to get sexual.
No, the sick man would be made to swallow a piece of pork fat tied to a string, which would then be yanked back
out.
Can
you think about it? I explained this to Natalie.
Why?
How does this make you feel better?
You puke, I guess.
I guess, but if that didn't work, you know what they do?
What?
They do it again. And if that didn't work, they do it again. And they do it again and again and again until the person stopped being sick or just started lying about feeling better.
You know what? Wow, doctor, that's the best medicine I've ever had. Thank you so much. I'm done with that.
I think it's more the latter. Yeah.
Now, like most whale ships of the era, the Essex took an indirect route following the Gulf Stream of the Atlantic. They're trying to go down towards the southernmost tip of South America. They're trying to pop around over into the Pacific.
You swing around Cape Horn.
Yeah. But this route took them all the way to North Africa, where they planned to stop off at the Azores Islands for provisions before sailing back towards Cape Horn. But just 3 days out of Nantucket, the Essex was ravaged by a storm that almost sank the ship.
Yeah,
fucking days.
It's just, there was a lot of, because I feel like there was a couple of other bad omens, because they talked about how there was, like, I wonder, there was a storm. There was something else that happened on the island.
Someone saw like a weird.
Yes, they saw a cryptid.
They saw a weird thing.
Yeah, they said they walked.
Like a dragon or something.
They said that there was like a sighting of a sea monster.
That's what it was.
They talk about, but again, so superstitious. Everyone was like immediately skittish about the boat leaving because there was like this weird harbinger of doom around it.
Yeah.
That's not a sea monster. That's my wife.
My wife. Thank you very much. Very good stuff.
Well, even though Pollard had been on the Essex for years, he froze up when the storm blew in. And because he hesitated in giving the order to turn, the Essex was almost tipped over and two whaleboats on deck were destroyed in the ensuing chaos.
Oh, my promotion.
But, you know, literally, I didn't know that this could even happen. So a wind hit it. He just did it. He fucked up. He choked.
Yeah.
He fucked up. He steered the ship the wrong way. Wind hit it straight on. It went completely sideways. And they had to wait for a wind, if it was going to come and pick them back up. Jeez. Literally. Yeah. Because they just said, because otherwise they're like, he's like, one of the thing notes I read that was like, well, the best part is that when the ship's sideways, at least it protects you from the wind.
Then
they're just stuck inside of like everyone's gripping, hanging from the sides of the boat.
Oh
and shit.
My God.
Yeah. And the cook had to like dive out of the kitchen because all of his stoves and shit just fucking flew to the other side of the room and almost crushed him.
The poor fat cook.
What the hell am I supposed to work in these conditions?
Live from your grave.
Now, the Essex was still seaworthy after the storm, but it was certainly weakened. But the loss of two whaleboats was a big deal because a ship needed three whaleboats and two to spare if it wanted to have a successful journey. And sure enough, Captain Pollard rightly decided that the voyage was a bust and a return to Nantucket for replacement boats and repairs was needed. You're only 3 days out.
Yeah.
What's the fucking difference?
Get back.
But his first and second mates disagreed, saying that all that could be taken care of once they arrived in Africa.
This is why I say the intern from hell, right? Because Owen Chase, he worked his way up, but they basically sat and he was like, you know, we need to turn around. We're going to repair. We're only 3 days out. We can just go, we can turn back around.
It's a carnival cruise.
But it is literally the equivalent of the new weird Nepo baby hire you bring to your CEO sphere, right? You got your 23-year-old son of your VP who's got a cell phone in hand looking at Twitter. He's like, but do you think that, how do you think Twitter will respond? Like, literally, it's that vibe where you're just like,
man,
you're going to freak out the sailors.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I know you might be Captain Roll, but like, I got here. I just arrived here.
Yeah.
And so I might know a little bit more.
I'm new blood.
Yeah. I'm a new direction. I'm a new vibe here. And so you might need to think about what you're doing, and we need to actually do the opposite of what you're doing. I know you're in charge, but
it's still up to the captain to make the right decision.
You're right.
Yes, it is. And, you know, it's not the worst call because, you know, the morale of the sailors, it's pretty low. They're 3 days out of a 2-year journey, and they've already almost died.
Everything's all fucked up.
Yeah.
Not to mention, if they went home, the amount of lesbian action they'd see as they enter their home.
Like,
their wife was like, I wasn't expecting you for another year and 2 years, basically.
We were doing the maiden crisscross.
Oh, no.
And so Pollard was swayed by his men for the first, but certainly not the last time, to make the wrong decision. Now, predictably, when they got to the Azores Islands, there were no spare whaleboats to be purchased. Likewise, when they continued south to the Cape Verde Islands, they only found that there was but one spare whaleboat to buy. And so, after trading 30 starving hogs that were almost skeletons for half a barrel of beans, or of course, actually, they traded the beans for the hogs.
Wait a second. They had a bunch of pigs on board this whole time?
No, it's going to get even weirder than the pigs.
Yeah, it gets weirder than that.
I'd listen to the pigs.
Well, after they got all these starving hogs on board, they continued on their journey towards South America, one boat down. But then, halfway between Rio de Janeiro and Buenos Aires, 3 months into the journey, the crew heard a cry from the lookout for the first time.
Oh my God, it was all those angry birds trying to kill the pigs.
Thar she blows!
Now, when the crew heard either thar she blows, thar she breaches, or thar goes flukes.
Oh yeah.
All perfectly reasonable signals meaning, hey, there's a whale. Everyone on the ship jumped into action.
Thargo's flukes is a really good thing to see. For the guy talking about, because you know what a whale tail is when you see the with the underwear flukes sticking out of the back of the pants.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
that's a fun thing to say instead of, because, like, you know, it's disgusting to say, like, oh, look at that whale tail. We go, Thargo's flukes.
Thargo's flukes.
Yeah, that's, oh, how you, that's when you see underwear sticking out.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, the men prepared the whale boats with harpoons and rope, and the harpoons were sharpened one last time as the ship overtook the whale. And once the Essex was within a mile, three whale boats were launched, one commanded by the captain, one by the first mate, and one by the second mate. Where they were once sailors, they were now hunters.
Yeah, they could put that other hat on.
Yeah.
No, it's kind of, it's fucking crazy what you have to do to hunt a whale.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be funny if they were just like hunting Chris Christie.
Because he's a big fat guy.
See? Again, folk, always forward momentum. Forward. Some of the best, most current, the most current.
Remember Bridge? Remember Bridge Gate?
I remember Bridge Gate.
I remember his
2014.
Yeah, I remember football too. Yeah, I mean, baseball.
Baseball, yeah. Big fupa. Now, each whale boat competed to see who could reach the whale first, but they also had to make sure to not scare the whale away by making too much noise. So the captains of the whale boat had to quietly coax and cajole the men in a way that's both aggressive and oddly tender. A little bit of cheerleading. Uh-oh. Here's an example. And Henry, I want you to do this verbatim. Please, okay, course, do this verbatim.
This is verbatim.
Do, for heaven's sake, spring. The boat don't move. You're all asleep. See? See? There she lies. Scold. Scold! I love you, my dear fellows. Yes, yes, I do. I'll do anything for you. I'll give you my heart's blood to drink. Only take me up to this whale. Only this time, for this one's pull. Oh, St. Peter, St. Jerome, St. Stephen, St. James, St. John, the devil on two sticks, carrying me up. Oh, let me tickle him. Let me feel of his ribs. There he goes on. Go on. Oh, most on, most on. Stand up, Starbuck. Don't hold your iron that way. Put one hand over the end of the pole now. Now look out. Dirt. Dirt.
Man, dude, you trying to flirt with me, man? You were going to go kill this whale.
Men get very close on the little boats.
I know they do.
Now, on the first attempt at killing a whale on the Essex voyage, a 20-year-old named Benjamin Lawrence threw the harpoon. But when it made contact with the whale's hide, the once docile 60-foot-long creature became a massive, deadly monster.
Cool.
With just one swipe of his tail, a sperm whale could destroy a whale boat. And indeed, when the harpooned whale got aggressive, a second whale came up from below and smashed in an entire side of the boat with one smack of the tail.
Sweet. I wonder if whales call it going human-ing?
No, they were just trying to fuck. They were just trying to live lives.
Yeah. None of the men were injured, but both whales were lost. Days later, after the whale boat was repaired, the lookout sighted whales once again.
There, she's coming!
Oh!
Oh! White froth and cream!
And the boats were launched. After catching up to the whale, a harpoon was successfully lodged into the whale's thick hide, and the creature took off, dragging the boat on what was called a Nantucket sleigh ride.
That's what they do. They stick the harpoon in, and then the whale goes running, and then you follow with the boat being dragged by the whale, and then you slowly but surely pull yourself next to the whale by the rope.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that really happened. That happened in the first God of War, and I think Red Dead Redemption.
There is real education. They're teaching the kids.
They're teaching the kids.
Did you get radicalized by an e-girl trying to get you to join the Air Force?
Yeah. I'm going to play the new Call of Duty Modern Warfare, but I've got to flip my entire political thought.
I think to join. You're technically you have to give money to someone.
I'm starting to think they had weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, maybe.
We better go over there for freedom.
More like weapons of mass distraction.
Oh, wow.
Yellow cake.
I remember Hans Blix.
Yep, I remember all this.
Is 40.
Well, traveling at speeds of up to 20 miles an hour, a whale could drag a 25-foot whale boat by rope and harpoon for anywhere between 20 minutes and 24 hours, depending on how much the whale felt like putting up a fight. Once the whale tired itself out, though, the crew would haul themselves within stabbing distance, and there, the real carnage would begin.
Yeah, it gets fucking gnarly.
So literally, the whale at this point is exhausted, probably near death.
Well, it's tired for certain.
It's tired, yeah. Well, the harpooner and the mate would trade places so the mate could take the honor of the kill. And using a 12-foot-long killing lance with a petal-shaped blade, the mate would stab the whale again and again to find the whale's vital organs.
Yeah, it was not an exact science.
No.
May I say, aren't they always in the same spot?
I mean, it's a very large animal. I mean, that's the thing. It's not like you're dealing with like a bear. Like you're dealing with an animal that can be anywhere between 40 and 80 feet long.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the thing is that it's also one big tube.
It's a tube of guts. It's like you're just fishing around with this fucking knife looking for the important ones.
Yeah. And well, the goal was to find a group of coiled arteries in the vicinity of the lungs because the head was too hard to stab the brain and the heart was buried deep within the whale. But when that coil was punctured, everyone knew because, in author Nathaniel Philbrick's words, the whale spout would transform into a 15 to 20 foot tall geyser of gore.
Whoa.
It's fucked up.
It's like Nightmare on Elm Street when Johnny Depp got killed.
Yeah, it is. This would be met with a cry of
chimneys of fire.
Whoa.
Yeah. That meant that the whale was drowning in its own blood and would soon be dead.
Yeah. Oh. I mean, we've all had a chimneys of fire moment, though.
Fun. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah. After Buffalo Wild Wings.
Yeah. Oh. The whale would then vomit and die in a pool of its own blood and puke in a nasty, drawn out death.
It's very sad.
Yeah.
Now, once the whale was dead, the three whale boats would latch on and tow the 40 to 60 ton carcass back to the ship at a rate of 1 mile an hour.
Whoa, they're cooking.
Oh, dude.
Usually they could expect to tow the creature about 5 miles. But once they got there, the entire crew turned from hunters to butchers and eventually factory workers.
Who wears the new hats? Tony, you're in charge of bringing the butcher hats.
I don't know what I am unless I have a new hat on.
Oh my God. All we got is these Dave and Buster's caps that say, I love being a cuck.
Well, it said that whalers were
Dick's Last Resort.
But also Dave and Buster's. Every time I go there, I see so many guys wearing hats that say, I love being a cuck.
Yeah, it's different though. I think they're just selling them like it's merch.
Yeah. Well, also speaking of death, you know, Buster committed suicide.
Yeah, that's true.
It's true.
That is true.
Wow.
Yeah, man.
Wow.
If the Lord of Fun can't live, I don't know what we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Well, when it came to the first whale killed on the ill-fated voyage of the Essex, the corpse was tied to the starboard side. Pieces of blubber were cut from the whale and lowered into the blubber room below decks, where it would eventually be processed into oil. Once all the blubber was stripped, the sperm whale's head, which constituted a third of the sperm whale's total length, it was cut off and hauled up to the ship's deck, pouring out blood and gore.
It's so gross. It's just like, must have been so fucking gross.
Really ploppy. A lot of plop.
Yeah.
And they also built these giant kilns that were on the boat, right? So they had these like brick ovens in the center of the boat that would be used to boil the blubber into the oil.
Yeah, and we'll get to
artisanal pizza.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it is definitely from fin to table.
Yeah, we'll get to the boiling of the blubber here in a second. But once they brought up the head, a hole would be cut out of the top of the skull and men would climb inside the head with buckets to remove all the spermaceti they could get their hands on.
I love the feeling of, I love the smell of spermaceti in the morning.
Absolutely.
Because you just get right in there, man. Mm-hmm. They would just be scooping out with their hands because they want to get every little bit of it.
Yeah, spelunking for sperm.
Hey, spelunking for spunk.
There you go.
Well, despunking.
Yes, indeed.
Well, after that, the men would return to the body and probe the whale's intestinal tract with a lance, searching for another substance called ambergris.
Well, that's going to be full of shit.
Yeah, it was. That's the thing.
It basically is.
They're doing the worst possible shit.
But guess what it was used to make?
What?
Perfume.
Poopy?
Perfume.
No, I know, but was it the whale poop that made the perfume?
I know it wasn't whale poop. It was something like, it was some sort of disease.
Perfume was made out of a disease?
Basically, I think what it was sort of like if you crusted out.
Solid, waxy, flammable substance of a dull gray or blackish color.
If you, if you crusted out somebody's arteries, you know, like fatty arteries. Uh-huh. It's kind of like if you crusted that out and then made perfume out of it.
And that smells good.
It is used to allow the scent to endure much longer.
Mm-hmm.
But now they figured out a new way to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they said that sometimes, and the dogs love it.
Oh, good. Well, isn't that nice?
And it was worth more than its weight in gold.
Wow.
Yeah. And the whale blubber would then be boiled in a process called trying out the whale. See, when the blubber was boiled into oil, it produced cracklings on the surface.
Oh, that's not bad. You need a crackling.
I mean,
a good old crackling.
Normally, I love a crackling.
Yeah. But they would skim off the cracklins and use it as fuel, meaning the whale was used to burn itself.
Quit burning yourself.
Yeah. One green hand described the trying as having the quality of a, quote, indescribable uncouthness.
Yeah, I feel I feel that it is indescribably uncouth.
Yeah,
this
because
it isn't that bad. I mean, they got to cook up the whale. They got to prepare it, you know?
They're also doing that on a deck that is covered in half an inch of blood. There's guts everywhere. Yeah. The carcass is strewn all over,
and everywhere.
Everyone is covered in this shit for days at a time. That used to be a trick that they play on the green hands, is that with the green hands, it smelled so awful and it was so terrible that the green hands would change out of their clothes after every shift. What they didn't know is that your clothes are ruined if you wore them during the trying.
Right.
So what they would have to do is buy more clothes from the ship's canteen, and that's how the green hands got into debt to the ship before they even came back.
Perfect.
Business on business on business on business.
On business, yeah.
There it is. It would be fun to make a bloody snow angel.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Look at me. Look at me. Typical green hand.
Well, additionally, the smelly, thick, greasy black smoke created by this process smelled, in Herman Melville's words, quote, like the left wing of the Day of Judgment, an argument for the pit.
Yeah. Wow. But then again, as you've seen, we talked about a little bit earlier, some of the more experienced whalers would go to what they say, love the smell, because that means the expedition's going well.
Okay.
Well, this process went on continuously in shifts for 3 days. After it was all done, the deck would be mopped up, the corpse would be cut away, and the search for another whale would begin anew. Now, by the time the Essex had killed this first whale, they'd already been out at sea for 4 months, a poor showing by any measure.
Yeah, one whale, 4 months?
No, it was bad.
It's been bad.
This was disconcerting to everyone on board, because remember, whalers made a share, not a wage, and the voyage wasn't over until the hold was full of oil.
And there was no guaranteed exit to their contract,
no.
So they could be out there, until the hull is full.
Mm-hmm. Like they're actively killing their product with no ability to, like, regenerate it as well.
That
so
was a concern to them.
It's harder and harder
Pocahontas
and harder.
Pocahontas was wrong, right? We said this at the top of the episode.
Wow.
Pocahontas was incorrect, because was Pocahontas in charge of Walmart? I don't think
so.
She had sex with a 60-year-old man.
Yeah.
And she was 12 at the time.
You can buy her action figure, though, at Walmart.
That's right.
Toys.
That's when that's where she finally gets her comeuppance.
You can also buy the Guy Fawkes masks at Walmart and Target.
That's wonderful.
Sharply ironic in the most dark way possible.
They won.
Yeah. And our board game also available at Target.
Target!
Good work, guys.
Absolutely. It's very fun. The only complaints I've had is from people who are too stupid to figure it out.
You mean us?
Yeah, us. Yeah. Because they explained it to us and we were like, well, we can't do that. But no, people have loved the game.
Now, once the Essex finally rounded Cape Horn at the southernmost tip of South America, they made their way up the coast of Peru, where they finally hit some luck, and they began killing whales at a clip of one every 5 days. But just as things were turning around, the Essex met with the Aurora, owned by the same company and captained by the former captain of the Essex, Daniel Russell. Now, Russell told Pollard that he'd heard about a spot over 1,000 miles west of South America where another captain said that he'd fairly quickly filled up his ship with 2,000 barrels of whale oil.
This is the competition. This is a lie.
It also doesn't make any sense because he just whaled it. It's like going. It's like trying to go on a slot machine after the person just won the jackpot. They're like, oh, this one's lucky.
Yeah.
No, you're a fucking moron.
Yeah, I remember that when you don't win at a slot machine and they cover you in whale blood.
Yeah.
Man, they gotta stop this.
Well, I mean, the reasoning was somewhat sound. It was like, okay, this guy killed all these whales last November. It's May. When they're talking to each other, it's May of 1820. And so you can go this November, and then you can get the spoils this time.
Oh. Well,
you know, and that's the thing. At this time, there are millions of whales in the ocean. It's not like there's like 15 whales that everyone's trying to
whales.
Kill.
Yeah. I will say, it is, you know, I feel for the marine biologists that they talk to in all of these documentaries, because each one of them literally on the verge of tears. Like, they're
love
all
whales
trying,
so much.
Like, they love whales. Whales are their life. And all of them are like, and the sperm whale can only really reproduce every 5 years. Which, I mean, of course, yeah, it's horrible.
It's awful.
But it's that, too, where it's like, so they don't really repopulate that fast.
No, they really don't. Like, the sperm whales
We now know a specific language for each family.
Each family, and they have names for each other.
They
it's
do.
It's very sad.
It's very sad.
That
very
is sad.
Sad,
yeah.
Well, this new spot was called the offshore ground. And in reality, it was more like 1,500 miles off the coast of South America.
Yeah, these guys really estimate a lot of shit.
Yeah.
The big estimations.
From what we now know, the offshore ground is roughly the area around Tahiti and Easter Island. It's the South Pacific. So, taking a chance, Captain Pollard decided to head into fairly untested waters because they were only halfway to filling their ship with oil after having been away for well over a year. And really, this is, again, not the worst decision, had it not been for one fateful whale.
And finally, he's nominated for an Oscar.
Wow.
Now, before heading to the offshore ground, Pollard ordered his men to stop off at the Galapagos Islands so they could farm for tortoises. Because true to form, whalers were a fucking virus that consumed everything in their path in the pursuit of oil.
Well, they tortoises also had... are fun because they're also their own little bulls.
Yeah, that is sort of how they use it, but it's really fucked up
what
they did to the turtles. Because they were like, they had this idea of like, turtles don't eat.
What do you mean?
They're like, they just said, they just had this kind of like, fantasy like idea that oh no, a turtle, you can just keep it on a boat because it doesn't eat.
Yeah,
turtle does eat.
Well, that's the thing, is that a turtle actually can go a year without, or a Galapagos tortoise can go a year without food or water because their metabolism is extremely slow. But to the whalers, this meant turtles don't eat.
Turtles don't eat.
Well, for a year, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, tortoises, they weighed between 80 and 100 pounds. Some could be as heavy as 400 pounds. There's some massive tortoises out there, and sailors loved eating Galapagos tortoises, which we now so consider to be like one of the most precious animals in existence.
Another one they're like, this is tasty. Why don't we cut off the head, throw the rest of it in the garbage? Yeah, excellent.
You'd eat it, Henry. You need a tortoise right now.
I don't like turtle.
Yeah.
I've had
just
turtle.
Just because you
don't like it.
Yeah. If you loved it.
Yeah, sure. It'd be great. I'd love it. Yeah. Wipe them out. But I hate it. I think it's gross.
But
yeah.
It was
let him live.
It was the turtle just competing with the dolphin and the whale. So turtle meat is probably much better.
Turtle meat was top because it was lean and tasty. It was
a
white
meat. Soup.
You can make a soup. Yeah. And their necks are actually full of fresh water. So that's an extra source of water.
That's
it's
a straw.
Not tasty. It's not Poland Spring. But
they're like little straws.
Yeah, they are because they grew up in evolved in a volcanic environment.
It's so fucking brutal. It's so fucked up.
And so the Essex crew disembarked and collected 180 tortoises for the rest of the voyage. Just imagine this fucking crew of whalers just hauling off on the Galapagos Islands with a bunch of sacks and just getting all the turtles and taking all the turtles away. And then they stacked them like boulders in the hull.
Yeah.
And then the turtles that they couldn't stack, they just littered the fucking deck tortoises.
It's kind of fun to have a bunch of turtles around. I bet you somebody was like, that's my turtle. You don't fuck with
me. Oh, there must be. Well, I can guarantee there's a couple of them being like, that's my friend.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Well, because they're doing nothing for weeks at a time.
Yeah, they're just sitting on a boat.
Hanging out with turtles.
Yeah, just talk to the turtle.
You can play Hungry Hungry Turtles.
No, you can't play Hungry Hungry Turtles because they thought that they were not Hungry Hungry Turtles.
Oh. Well, not content with depleting the tortoise population of the island, one of the harpooners lit some bushes on fire as a prank.
Yeah, look at this play. Look what I'm doing.
Yeah,
is that fun? You thought I'd leave one thing alone. But no, I could set fire to that as well.
My uncle did that.
Yeah.
Or July 4th one day on accident.
What?
He lit a bunch of bushes. He threw a grenade and blew up a bunch of bushes.
Oh, that's fine. That's in Wisconsin.
You could set fire
to a whole patch of Wisconsin.
It was the 80s. I think it was the 80s.
This fire burned down the entire island.
Yeah.
Like it engulfed the entire island in flames. And it was still a blackened wasteland years later. Never fully recovered. Still to this day, kind of fucked up.
But it's like 30 years before Darwin.
Yeah,
something
it is.
Like
it's
that.
A long. Yeah, by the time Darwin got to the Galapagos Islands, not only had whalers completely just decimated the population, but San Franciscans had also discovered that turtles are super tasty. So there was this pipeline from the Galapagos Islands to San Francisco.
People
just
going,
getting a bunch of turtles, bringing them back, slaughtering all of them on the fucking bay.
Just being a turtle and just being like, you guys have beef. You guys have chicken. You guys have pork. You have so many other far more delicious meats than us. How in the living fuck did you find me? I'm covered in a protective shell.
Yeah,
I am.
Right.
There's all of it saying, don't eat me. Don't eat me. Leave me alone.
Sailing thousands of miles to ground.
All of you dying of scurvy and all this stuff. Just eat this disgusting wormy meat.
I don't know. It's ready to go.
Yeah.
Again, it is a microwavable dinner of the sea.
Yes. Now, to give you some perspective on how time worked on a whale ship, the Essex heard about the offshore ground in May and set course, but they didn't actually arrive there until, as I said, November of 1820. This is actually perfect timing because that was the month in which sperm whales were supposed to arrive there. It's presumed that it was a breeding ground. By then, they were 1,000 miles from the Galapagos Islands and hadn't seen a whale in weeks, which raised tensions even further.
Yeah.
But finally, the lookout spotted a whale, and first mate Owen Chase was the first to launch his boat. But before he could throw his harpoon, the whale surfaced underneath his boat with enough force to throw Chase into the air, and the creature escaped, further increasing frustration aboard the Essex, and especially further increasing the frustration in Owen Chase.
Bet you the turtles laughed, though.
Yeah, I'm like, gotcha, fucking bitches.
4 days later, whale spouts were seen once again. But while the other two boats managed to harpoon whales, Owen Chase's whale boat got smashed by a whale tail.
Oh!
Angered that he'd been knocked out of the hunt again, Chase hurriedly repaired his boat by very quickly and very loudly nailing canvas over the hole, and he returned to the fray.
This was a captain's idea.
Yes.
Because he was like, instead
well, first mate's idea.
Yeah, he was like, let's just fix this up real quick, right? Yeah. We got to get him back out there. So instead of properly fixing it, we'll just nail this piece of canvas to it, which is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen such a large whale tail since I was at the Outlet Mall in New Jersey.
See? That's fun.
Mm-hmm. Now, behind the helm of the Essex was cabin boy Thomas Nickerson, all of 15 years old.
Oh.
Because when everybody, when the whale ships launched, almost everyone on board were on those ships. Only three people were left behind to keep the ship from sinking.
I mean, that's where you want to be. You want to be left behind in that situation.
Very much so. Very much so, yeah.
Well, Nickerson later wrote that off the port bow, he saw, very suddenly, the largest sperm whale anyone on board had ever seen. An 80-ton leviathan, 85 feet long, as big as the ship itself.
Wow. Yeah, and they, because we had sort of, you know, we had run through a lot of the bigger whales already.
Mm-hmm.
Because this was a bull whale, it was a large male whale. And that we've discovered at this point that we had been searching for these big whales, because that's what fills up the hole, that's what fills up the hull faster than a bunch of little tiny whales.
I've seen some documentary footage on that. Yeah.
And so he wanted to, but... So this was a rare find, and this thing was specifically extremely on the fringe of sperm whale size. It was very, it was like, almost like, at first you're like, yes, look at all the oil, and then you're eventually like, oh no.
They got to deal with it.
Yeah.
Rise from your grave.
Now, whales rarely attacked ships, usually opting instead for the whale boats that were obviously trying to kill it. In fact, in Nantucket lore, no whale had ever made a direct assault on the main ship, or at least no one had ever returned to tell the tale of a whale attacking a ship.
Whoa.
But this was no ordinary.
You're telling me it's a whale tale about a tale of a whale? Or
yes.
Your boat?
Very good.
That's good. It's like kind of a limerick.
But this was no ordinary encounter. This was the whale of Ahab.
Oh.
The book.
Oh.
The book. The book. Book. Yeah. It's the book.
It's not nearly
he's
as
not,
cool.
He's
the
not
whale.
Like an Instagram influencer.
No, oh, I see.
No, no.
It's
Captain,
like,
Captain Ahab. It's a moment of it's a literary illusion.
Yeah, you can know the tale, the whale of Ahab covered in tattoos and stuff.
Whoa. Current.
Antifa.
Antifa.
You're more like Auntifa.
You really nailed it. We're hip.
Well, swimming beneath the surface of the water with its head directly pointed at the Essex, the whale dove and came back up 35 yards away, and with a tremendous crash, it rammed the side of the ship, sending sailors and tortoises flying across the deck.
Man, what a day for the tortoise. He just got to be like, come on, can I get a break out here?
The whale then swam under the ship and bumped the bottom hard enough to knock off the false keel. Then it resurfaced near the rear at the starboard quarter. Now, at this point, first mate Owen Chase actually had a chance to harpoon the whale and maybe save the ship, but he hesitated.
Oh, Owen!
But that was actually the right decision, because the tail was dangerously close to the ship's rudders, and if the rudders were damaged, everyone would be fucked. And conventional knowledge held that this whale probably didn't attack the ship on purpose. Conventional knowledge, whales don't attack ships. So it's like, okay, well, I'll just get it the next time around.
Have we thought about maybe removing those huge, perfect whale tits from the bottom of our vessel?
I don't know. I wouldn't recognize the boat without them.
Yeah, it seems like this whale really wants to fuck.
Yeah, but he probably did. Yeah. That is a kind of what what it was doing was their fucking.
I don't know. There's a lot of theories. But had Chase taken the chance, he might have averted the many tragedies to come. The whale, still in a sort of insane rage that none of the whalers had ever witnessed.
I hate Velma! I hate Velma!
Very good.
It began snapping its huge jaws and thrashing at the water. Then it turned back towards the Essex at a distance of 600 yards. And at twice his original speed, it torpedoed the ship with its skull.
It is very cinematic. Like, they're just sitting on the boat, and you watch this thing, because they said it was stunned, right? So it was kind of, like, flopping next to it, and they're like, oh, what's it going to do? And they watch it swim away, and they're like, oh, yeah, like,
thank God.
Right, like, anyway, let me over. And then just watching it turn around.
Oh, no.
Like, oh, holy shit. And it just destroys, because they're talking about, like, it was like eyes of wonder. Like, the way they talk about, like, when it just hit the boat, they're all like, this literally, it's just never happened. We've never even heard of this happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, brutal.
And with that, the Essex began sinking bow first.
Nice. If you're a whale, this is a great day. You got all the food.
Well, one of the sailors, William Bond, had on his own initiative retrieved the navigational equipment in the officer's quarters and ran it back to the spare whaleboat being prepared for sea. Had he not done that, no one would have survived. Bond and the others made it just as the deck of the Essex was inches above the ocean's surface, and the great old ship capsized moments later. 2 miles away, the third whaleboat, commanded by Captain Pollard, could only watch as the Essex sank below the horizon.
I mean, so much better to watch.
I guess.
Thank God we're not that guy.
Mm-hmm. But you know that everything's fucked, because all of your shit was on that.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
When Pollard and his men returned, they found the hull floating on her side, and each man stared at the wreckage in silence in what Chase called, quote, the paleness of despair. Hmm. By Owen's later reckoning, it was less than 10 minutes time between the whale's first attack and the eventual capsizing of the ship.
So the lesson, take the chance when you can.
Every day, take your shot.
Take your shot. Take your chance.
Take your shot.
Are you in?
Tell Becky you like her today.
Sure. Are you in the middle of
harpoon Becky in the belly and drag yourself closer to her, mine her for her oil, which is her blood. Your amber grease cut up the top of her head and suck out her brains.
You want to be a comedian, but you live in Mondovi, Wisconsin? You can pick up, you get on the plane, you go to New York City.
You move to downtown Mondovi. And you start the Yuckle Hut in downtown Mondovi.
Mondovi.
And now the 21 men were all huddled together in what amounted to large open air rowboats with only the clothes on their backs and a bunch of now fairly useless harpoons. But all this begs the question, why did the great beast attack?
I hate Velma!
I know.
Well, author Nathaniel Philbrick believed that it may have been a case of mistaken identity.
Hmm.
See, sperm whales use a cartilaginous clapper system.
Tell me more.
That's how I can see where Kissel is.
Yes, indeed.
The cartilaginous clapper system is used to create a clicking sound that sperm whales use to see through echolation, and they use it to communicate with other whales. Here's what it sounds like.
Well, thank you.
Make sure to drink your Ovaltine.
Yes.
All right.
Oh, yes. That was quite a funny joke. You guys don't get the reference. Yes.
Now, the females have a more... Yes, so was it quite droll?
Yeah, it was quite droll. Very funny. Almost a British sense of humor in the whale.
Now, the females have a Morse code-like series of clicks. It's closer to what we just heard. But males have slower, louder clicks that whalers called clangs. And they learned to listen for clangs because a clang meant a bull, and that meant more oil.
Sure.
Clangs often sounded like the tapping of a hammer. And it's thought that when first mate Owen Chase nailed the piece of canvas to the bottom of his whaleboat in haste, he might have transmitted sounds that told this other whale that there was a competing bull in his territory.
No!
Yes, and he might have been there slinging his actual cum.
He might have been.
We don't know. And they're also saying, did he bump into the boat accidentally? Yeah. There's some of that talk. They don't know whether or not he first hit it and he didn't know what it was. And then he's like, what? What the fuck are you trying me? And then he came back around and he did it again.
Yeah.
Well, it was the devil himself.
Yeah, or it was the devil himself.
Right.
That's also another theory. Yeah. But it was more like that he wasn't trying to fuck the ship. It was that he was trying to kill another whale that was trying to fuck his whale.
His whale.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've seen reality TV. I know how this works.
I've watched a lot of Bridezilla recently.
Oh, yeah. Not doing well.
Well, this is why they have this theory. Typically, when a whale fought with a whaleboat or a whale ship, it used its jaws or its tail. But whalers have noted that competing male sperm whales will attack each other in a similar way to how the 85-foot-long bull attacked the Essex, head-on.
Oh.
And while the Essex was indeed made of strong white oak, it was 21 years old and had gone through two serious storms during that last voyage alone.
Oh, yeah.
Making it no match for the Leviathan that attacked it.
Cool.
And ironically, it has since been found that the echolocation system in sperm whales seems to be built around the organ that produces spermaceti.
Spermaceti.
Whoa, so this thing was full of it.
Yeah, man, to the brim, frothing with it.
Whoa.
And that means that the thing that the whalers were killing the whales to get was their eventual engine of destruction.
Whoa. Interesting.
Wow, that's like being someone who makes wine who's killed by grapes.
Yeah, oh no, I slipped on these grapes.
No.
I fell on my artillery shell. I went up my ass.
Oh yeah, that does happen.
Yeah, yeah, we've seen that. Two different stories.
I've been like twice a year on Science Stories. Yeah. Somebody gets something shoved up their ass.
I fell.
And so Captain Pollard ordered his men to salvage what they could from the floating wreckage. They found two casks of bread, 600 pounds of hardtack, and several barrels of fresh water. Now, this sounds like a lot, and it was.
I mean, no. No.
Well, it was for a year-long journey. It's a lot to have.
Two loaves of fucking bread?
No, 600 pounds of hardtack. That's a lot.
What's hardtack?
Hard bread.
It's hard bread. It's like
bread.
Yeah, it's a hard biscuit that you have to soak in water in order to eat.
Which is difficult because they don't have any water.
Yeah.
Well, actually, salt water might be good on that.
No, it's not. No. Actually, they try. We'll get into why that's a horrible idea on the next episode.
A little sardine.
Dehydrates you.
But the thing is that even this was far too much for the whale boats to carry. They're 25-foot long boats. And there's seven guys in each of these rowboats. So they don't have a whole lot of room for food or for huge barrels of fresh water.
Right.
So they took what they could fit along with a lot of tortoises and a couple of hogs.
Are they ever eating these goddamn hogs?
It's hard because now you got to find the room you got to take them apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And after 3 days of salvaging what they could and constructing makeshift sails for their whale boats, they called them jibs.
Oh, yeah. That is cute.
Yeah. That is nice.
The men were suddenly, quote, I love this phrase, bludgeoned with despair.
Yeah, oh, they got sad. I know that feeling a little bit, but not like that. Not like being marooned on a boat.
Yeah.
Thousands of miles away from a coastline.
No, but just like being surrounded by a bunch of bread and pigs.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, ugh, like all these bread pigs, but I can't eat them because none of them are prepared.
That's hell. And some of the men began fainting from anxiety as reality set in, and they couldn't eat or drink, which this should have been when they were eating and drink, at least putting on some pounds because they were having to leave a lot of food behind, but they couldn't because they were so fucking scared.
Oh, come on. How scared do you got to be not to be able to eat?
I've been, that's a daily occurrence.
No. I'm an eater when I am scared.
Yeah.
You got to build that. That's technically your reptilian brain saving your life.
Mental insulation, yeah. Yeah. Well, sometimes your reptilian brain tells you you can't eat because something is trying to kill you.
Yeah.
If you stop to eat, then that thing is going to kill you.
You can eat on the go.
That's when you got to release scat. If you release scat, then the predator looks for your scat.
Absolutely. Yeah, the scat is like, it's almost like a hologram you.
Yeah, always.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I love that scene in Star Wars where that was just scat.
Scat.
It'd be like, Darth Vader's here?
Help me, Obi-Wan.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, things were made worse than...
Obi-Wan's shit.
Darth Vader's. Actually, what I was thinking about was Jar Jar Binks scat.
Yeah.
Because he was so scared when the poodoo came. And he said, oh, no, you got the donkey poodoo, or whatever the poodoo was. There was a lot of poodoo.
I don't know what that was all about. I do like Jar Jar. I'm team Jar Jar. And without him, they wouldn't have survived because he knew how to fly.
He did serve a function.
Yeah.
I think
he didn't know how to do the boat, though. He just sat there and screamed the entire time.
Whatever. Yeah, he's funny comic relief.
Misa, so Jar Jar.
Yeah,
he's a funny comic relief.
He just screamed.
He was funny comic relief. But I think he would have little turd. I think he would have rabbit-like turd.
Yeah, like pellets.
Yeah, pellets. Or is it like that hippo video where the poop... I don't know.
I don't know. I haven't gotten to that Disney Plus series yet.
Oh, God.
Well, things remained worse.
Jar Jar shits.
Seriously, we're very close to that.
Always moving forward.
Everything is content. It's all content.
Things remained worse the next morning when the Essex began to break apart.
Ugh.
And the whale oil...
Jar Jar shit just him in a fucking toilet. Mickey Mouse just masturbating in front of him.
Me so shitting.
Oh, God. They won't let me. They won't let me pitch. They won't hear my pitch.
Dude, I know, man. I know. Wow. We had our chances at pitch meetings.
Oh, we had them.
Starter logs.
Yeah. So dramatically blew those in a way that was... Almost watching our manager be so sad, and then we were laughing.
Yeah, we were laughing.
Because we had no choice. Yeah.
Well, the Essex began to break apart, and the whale oil that the men had worked so hard to harvest slicked around them in a reeking pool from which there was no immediate escape. Now, by noon on the fourth day, Captain Pollard had made his navigational calculations and was ready to discuss options with his first and second mate, of which there were actually quite a few.
Okay.
First, they could backtrack to the Galapagos Islands, 1,500 miles away. This was a bad option for multiple reasons. And likewise, Hawaii, that was also discussed. They knew where Hawaii was, but the small vessels couldn't survive Hawaii's storm season. They were right in the middle of it.
Mm.
They could also sail west towards the island of Marquesas, about 1,200 miles away, which was a pretty smart move. Marquesas had been a popular port for Chinese traders for decades, and the island of Tahiti was reachable as well. Both could be reached in less than 30 days.
Sounds fun.
But by 1820, Nantucket sailors had come to believe that many South Pacific islands were infested with cannibals.
Coincidence?
Strange.
See, a few years earlier, a U.S. Navy captain had published reports that in time of famine, the people of the Marquesas Islands would butcher wives, children, and aged parents for food. And another visitor to the island said that the natives greatly enjoyed human flesh and, quote, those who have once eaten it can with difficulty abstain from it.
Oh, they just absolutely love it.
I think coconuts might be better.
Oh, absolutely.
But again, it's also a bit like a fear of the unknown race.
Oh, yeah.
You know, sure. It's like you look at this thing and you kind of paint it being like, oh, no, they're primitives and they must eat each other.
Well, it's
but
a
also,
bit...
there was also within sailing life, cannibalism was kind of referred to as a thing that was like, well,
they called it the custom of the sea. That was their euphemism.
Oh, well, that's horrifying. It's kind of like cannibal Holocaust in a way.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, was cannibalism practiced on South Pacific Islands from time to time? Yes.
Sure.
Was it cannibal Holocaust? No. It's not.
I'd give him my pinky toe. I'd be like, here's a little tip.
Yeah, why don't you suck on that bone a little bit, right?
Yeah, suck on that bone. There's some good mara on there.
And from what it seems, Captain Pollard probably knew this, especially since Tahiti was by this time home to a thriving English mission, complete with a large chapel. But Captain Pollard's style of captaining was decidedly more democratic, which was absolutely the wrong style in a fix such as this.
Yeah. I feel like when you're on a bunch of boats, right, and then everything's gone, now you're fucked.
Fuck.
The idea of taking a vote at that point, you're like, let's just go with my fucking idea.
You got to be a leader just sometimes. Then you get back to the democracy when you're on the boat.
Yeah.
When you're on the land, right?
But this isn't the time to check the polls, Owen.
No, you got to lead here.
Well, Pollard knew that heading to the islands would increase their chances of survival, but most of the men were scared not only of the cannibals, but by the fact that the people on those islands also openly accepted and practiced homosexuality.
Which is just like, you're on a boat, bro.
Yeah.
I know you're seeing, I know that you provide comfort every once in a while.
Absolutely.
I know you see a man hurting for it.
Yeah.
And you're sitting near me like, arr.
Yeah.
I so can get in them.
Their homophobia was so deep. They're marooned in the middle of fucking nowhere. It's possible going to be whale meat at any time. But the idea of seeing another man's ball sack was like, I'd rather have this.
Yeah. I mean,
I'd rather eat hard ball sack
all day.
It was both things combined with each other. It was like, not only are they cannibals, but they have sex with each other.
They have sex with each other.
I mean, come on. We're here at sea. Yeah, we'll suck each other's dicks all the fucking time, but they love each other.
All right, love. Private Ben Shapiro, that's really not the biggest deal. It doesn't matter.
A woman should only be wet if you dunk her in a pool.
Who
should push her in a river?
I know. You're a manly man. You're a man. Can you go back to please cleaning out all the turtles?
And so instead of hanging out with a bunch of chill gay dudes in Tahiti, probably having a wonderful time.
Incredible.
Man. Chapter 7. Margaritas.
Yeah.
Chapter 9. Pina coladas.
Pina coladas.
Wow, this really jumped the shark there, Herman.
Instead of that, they went with arguably the worst option.
Great.
They decided to follow the easterly trade winds back to the coast of South America, 1,500 to 2,000 miles away by their reckoning, where they'd hopefully be picked up by another whaling vessel.
And this would become forever memorialized in the writing as the fatal error.
Mm-hmm.
All that had to happen was one dude had to raise his hand, much like they did in the 90s, and say, brother, they're gay. More pussy for us. And then everyone would have been like, more pussy for us.
Holy fucking wow. Shit.
Brother, my paradigm. Your shit is dead.
Flipped it.
Flipped a paradigm.
As a result, and trying to avoid cannibalism, the crew very ironically guaranteed it.
Oh, man.
And that's where we'll pick back up for the conclusion to our series on the tragedy of the Essex.
Yep. And that's why it's good to be skinny on a boat. Yep.
It really is. I'm starting to think I'm a little pro-whale.
Yeah, man.
We all are.
We all are
pro whale because it comes down to it. They asked for it. You went out there. You went to try to hunt this giant animal that's just fucking sitting there. And then sometimes it's going to fuck you up.
Yeah.
And then maybe we'll figure out. I bet you, because they talk about how many times these ships went missing. How many more whales killed ships?
Yeah.
It must have happened way more than they ever thought that it did.
All for fucking candles.
For candle.
Well,
candles.
No, candles were the part of it, but it was straight up. It's the fucking lubrication for all of the factory.
The machines.
Yeah, it's the lubrication. Yeah, we'll get into it later, but yeah.
I can't wait.
I mean, really, what happened with whaling is...
Yeah, we'll be slick with it.
Yeah, we'll be real slick with
it.
The next
two episodes, we're going to be completely covered in KY.
That's great.
Yeah, it wasn't until the discovery of petroleum in 1859 that whale oil started going out of fashion. So you compare it to ExxonMobil. Yeah, ExxonMobil was what killed the whaling industry. All comes back to lubrication, man. All of it.
Well, fantastic. That's why I'm pro ExxonMobil to this day.
Brave stance.
Yeah, I know.
Wow, really brave.
Thank you all so much for listening. Do we have anything to announce? We have our Australian tour in August.
That has been rescheduled completely. I would like to invite you out. I'm going to put up an information on my social media, but we're going to be doing a bit of a Side Stories Live April 8th in Hollywood.
Yeah.
We're going to be in a movie theater helping me promote a project I'm working on.
I can't wait.
Help me promote a project I'm working on called Disaster Man. But it's going to be a big, fun live show.
Oh, can't wait.
So
that'll
just be
so
fun. It's going to be great. So we'll come out. We'll figure out. We'll give you more information
and you
as
know,
it rolls out.
It's another classic last podcast booking. I got a phone call from Henry and he was like, you don't mind a booked us on a show, do you? And I was like, absolutely not.
Also, another last podcast booking because this is the first I'm hearing of it.
See?
It's for Side Stories.
It's for Side Stories.
You could just, come and be entertained by us.
You could just sit
and watch. Be entertained
great.
By us.
Oh, that's perfect. Why would I do that?
Because you can't get
wow.
it up.
Wow.
Can't believe
wow.
it. But also,
if I'm showing up in the audience, why don't I just come on stage?
Well, why would I have sex with the cow if I can get the milk for free?
Yeah, why would I have sex with this guy at the cow shop?
That's great. Well, you're not invited. You have an anti-ticket. We've given him an anti-ticket.
Yeah, exactly. This is a ticket so you can go anywhere but here.
Great. Perfect. Sounds good. Perfect. I'm going to go. Well, I'll go watch a movie.
Go watch one of your bands that you like.
Don't see Avatar 2. It's a waste of time.
I heard it was fantastic.
It's fine. It's a screensaver that talks.
Oh, okay.
But also check out Deep Dives. We're having another season of LPN Deep Dives. This time it is with the beautiful Natalie Jean and the very talented Jackie Zabrowski.
Beautiful Jackie Zabrowski.
But you guys can check it out. It's based on the book series A Court of Thorns and Roses, which is this. It is a fuck book.
It's a
series of erotica books that's apparently very thick. And so they're going to talk about it. This book series has ripped through the lives of our families.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Every woman in our sphere ended up getting addicted to these books.
Horny.
They're humming with it. They're humming with these fae, man. They really deep dick.
Absolutely.
But Valentine's Day is when that will debut.
Oh, fantastic. Nice. And thanks for supporting our little serious ventures.
Oh, yes.
Open Lines and Hail Yourself. That's Monday and Tuesday at 6 p.m. PST. We've been enjoying the phone calls and just another little nice way to interact.
I like to see the people in here.
And I got to meet Brandon Marshall. The football player.
Wow.
And he said, I'm Ben Kissel. And he said, I'm Brandon Marshall. And he was very nice. And then he regards me now.
That's great.
He waved at me.
That's
and I was like, yeah.
That's all I want to be at. I want to be the, hello, Mrs. Anderson.
However, I would like to ask you, though, if Henry would have introduced himself, do you think that he would have kept noticing Henry because he's not because you're the same size as Brandon Marshall?
Yeah, he sees you as a thing that he can recognize. Well, I feel like he just throw towels at me.
No, I think he's a... We record next to each other, and I think he's impressed with how energetic we are.
Oh. Wow, he hates us.
I told him he fucking hates us. I told him what we cover. He's like, oh, that sounds, I was like, UFOs, aliens, fun stuff. He's like, that sounds really cool. Because, oh, he talks about football. So anyway, he can be a guest on maybe.
Let's do it.
That'd be great. That'd be awesome.
Flip him. Very attractive.
Yeah, he's a big guy.
Oh, and also, Last Comic Book on the Left, Volume 2.
It is out and it's delivering. Yeah, we got them
in the mail. They look fucking fantastic. There's some great stories by some amazing writers in this. We got fucking Rick Veitch. We got James Tynion. We had David Mack do a fucking variant cover for it. It's fucking amazing.
It's so cool looking. Yeah. It's great. It's beautiful. And we put a lot of work into it, and I'm glad you can finally get your
hands on it. Unlike Playboy, I read it for the pictures. Okay, everyone. Yeah. Thank you all so much for listening.
I just had to turn around.
Hail yourself.
Hail Satan.
Hogan.
Congratulations.
Leave the whales alone.
Please.
Stay away from the sea.
For now.
They're fascinating, mysterious creatures.
Until they figured out how to build a military.
Yep.
Because then they're coming back. I feel like they're going to come for revenge.
Can you bring a big spear onto a carnival cruise and just start whaling on it?
Just hang out by the hamburger buffet?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because they're big people.
Yeah, that's where my family was.
Yeah.
My cops.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.